without being disrespectful or trying to fight with you, actually, you're my friend, but I want to try and beat you and you're trying to beat me. And that's how we built what we had originally on Instagram before we were like entities of our own. We were trying to get more likes than the other guy. Yeah. And whoever won at the end of the week had to buy Cornettos for the loot, right?
Yeah.
That's how, well, it was just a game to see if we could beat each other at creativeness.
2019, I think I did 9 different countries, some from 3 times. I was everywhere. I was absolutely knackered. It was great seeing the world and being paid to do that and, you know, delivering education from, it might be a class of 4 people to, I think I did one with like, I think you had 4,000 in the crowd in Russia. Business-wise, does that transfer down? Probably not.
You understand it, right? Like, I remember being in the lobby of a hotel checking in to do a show for the weekend and this woman's like, can I have a picture of you? And I'm like, who are you going to show it to? Like, who's going to care?
Hi, welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. I'm Anthony Laban and we'll be talking to various people in the industry who've made it and their journey and how they got here. Talking honest, cutting through the crap, and making sure your story and their story is heard to help your business and hopefully mine. If you haven't already, please hit the subscribe button and I hope you enjoy this episode. Hi there, welcome back to the Noble Barber Podcast. Here we are at Baldy's Barbers for part 2. Hopefully you enjoyed part 1. I'm still here with Jim and with Baldy. And now we're kind of wanting to talk much more about, well, I guess show work always intrigues me. I first encountered yourself at hair shows, waving your Andis around and doing your thing. So, I mean, how did that work for you? Why did you get into it? And then, you know, what you feel about them and today, how relevant are they now still?
So I'll start with, like, how I got into it, if you like. So with the explosion of, if you like, social media and everything like that, it came along with that. Everyone wanted to do more, be seen, if you like. So weirdly, we went to the first Barber Connect, I think it was.
Celtic Manor.
Yeah, at Celtic Manor years and years ago, so around 2013, 14. We used to talk to loads of other barbers on Twitter, if anything. Oh,
mate, that's, yeah, old school.
Right? That's how long ago it was. So everyone was going, oh, are you going to Barber Connect? Yeah, we'll go there. We'll meet up. We'll have a drink. And then off the back of that, we created a thing called New World Barbers, which was
basically a WhatsApp group, wasn't it?
Yeah. And then it became an Instagram where we all posted each other's work on it.
Then the type of people, like, imagine we went into, sorry to cut you off, we went into a bar at the show and you've got like Alan Beak, Warren Flynn, Reese Beak, flipping, who else was there? Like, everyone was there, weren't there?
Loads of people.
Eddie Nash, like, everyone was there. And you're just a bunch of lads that knew each other from the internet and you're just having a drink.
Yeah.
Then it turned into New World Barbers. And now if you look at the same people that were stood in that group at that time having a chat organically as humans, every single one of them is a cornerstone
something
of the industry. Like, it's like really organic work, right?
So then I sort of wanted this thing where I spoke to everyone in the group and I was like, right, wouldn't it be nice if we can do something together? Like, you know, at a show or for a magazine or whatever. So I started bantering with Modern Barber back then. Didn't even know that it was. So Rachel Gould that owned it, didn't know who owned it. She was a woman. I was just chatting to someone at Modern Barber. And I was like, look, have you heard of this New World Barbers group? You know, everyone's good in their own right, this and the other. There's this person, this person, this person. And I said, you know, could you do a photo shoot for us? And she was like, we don't really have the budget for that. I've just done this or that. And I was like, okay. She goes, but leave it with me. Let me have a look around, see what companies might want to support it. And lo and behold, Andis were looking to relaunch in the UK. Rachel ended up like sort of being the middle person for it. Got us together. We cut the team down to, I think, six people they wanted. And then we went and did a photo shoot for them, video and stuff like that for their relaunch. And it sort of came off the back of that. They were then looking for educators. I wasn't interested originally, which was really weird because I was like, oh, I've got my shops, I'm busy.
Yeah. You know?
and she was like, well, we're coming back over in May. We're at Barber UK at the NEC. Would you come to that? Do like a live audition. So there was myself, Kieran, Alan, you was there. Who else was there? There was a few barbers. And so we did these live auditions. I literally came off the stage and she was like, how do you fancy coming to America? And I was like, yeah. So, and that was my first paid work on stage. And I say paid because we got paid. And I was like, this is amazing. I got paid for the photo shoot. I got paid for my live audition, if you like, for the day, well, the weekend. And I was like, this is amazing. The company's actually paying me for doing something. But I was so nervous initially doing that stage, that first stage bit. I was like, you know, you're looking, there's like 100 odd people in the audience or whatever. And Simon Shaw was one of them. He was smack back in the middle, which sort of gave me a boost because I literally got one half of the audience, the other half of the audience, got them to turn into the middle and say hi to Simon Shaw. And that was while I was on stage. So it was something different to what people had seen because it was myself and Kieran mainly on we worked together a lot of the time. No one really had that. We had our banter on stage and everything like that.
Lovely.
It was something totally different.
Very different.
So all of a sudden, we had a foot in the door, if you like, and a company that then went, come to America, we'll pay you this. Sign this contract, we'll pay you this. And I was like, this is amazing. You know, I never thought with my career that had stemmed way, way back,
all
of a sudden I was in my 40s and I had that opportunity, you know. But then you were trying new things. You were trying different things. That was, you know, that surge in the industry where everyone went, right, let's get creative.
Yeah, complete rebirth.
Let's push the standards. Now, I think that was the thing. Mm. It was the standard of cutting hair went up completely from, like we were talking about in the first segment, where, you know, bums on seats, all of a sudden, right, let's be creative and be the people that we are.
But even that transition to, for me, back into here as well, like, do you know how we would go and do these things and we'd come back and then, like, I'm over here, you're here, he's here, and I'm looking down the line, like, I'm battling you without being disrespectful or trying to fight with you. Actually, you're my friend, but I want to try and beat you and you're trying to beat me. And that's how we built what we had originally on Instagram before we were, like, entities of our own. We were trying to get more likes than the other guy. Yeah. And whoever won at the end of the week had to buy Cornettos for the loot, right?
Yeah.
That's how, well, it was just a game to see if we could beat each other at creativeness. Yeah. And that, it just turned into what it is now, I think.
I mean, it's interesting because there definitely was a change that you now see much more kind of banter, much more interaction. It feels like the kind of spirit of the barbershop is now
transported
at those
to the
shows.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Whereas prior to that, it was much more a kind of look and learn. This kind of quiet audience sitting
completely.
There. And now I'm doing this and now this. And then when you do that, da-da.
Yeah.
Whereas it's not so much. There's much more, you know, the stages, there's a bit of banter going across. It feels much more real.
I think the thing for us was we brought the barbershop to the stage.
Mm.
And it was intentional. It was like we were on there. We're going to be how we are.
Taking this to the, and, do you remember that there was a time where we did, I can't remember the show now, but it was a Barberside stage. And originally it was you two. And then they were like, we've got four chairs up there. Do you want to get some other lads up?
It was
so we ended up having
connect.
Our whole shop on one. So it was like all of the lads that worked here then on one stage with mics on. And we're just bantering, like, we were in the shop, but on the stage.
On the stage.
And I didn't pay, I don't know about you, but I didn't pay no attention to who was watching and what was going on.
I was running about in the audience.
Just having a fun time,
throwing
right?
stuff at people and like combs and towels and stuff like that. But that was it. It was like the injection of, it was our personalities, how we were in the shop on stage. But like you say, prior to that, people were like, oh, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, you know.
And you lost, you saw audiences just glazing over. I mean, as creatives, as barbers, we're used to standing up. We're not used to sitting down, let alone sitting down
for that,
hushed for 40 minutes watching a haircut that we pretty much knew.
But it took a little while to learn stage craft, if you like, because like we were rushing around like madmen on a stage with our personalities carrying us through. and then it probably, you know, you introduced a bit more professionalism, if you like, alongside your personality. You know, so now even at Barber Connect, you'll still see me jumping from bench to bench, talking to people with a microphone in my hand, because that's my personality. I quite like that interaction with things. I don't want to just be stood there like
static,
you know. So I still like to have my personality involved in it while I'm on stage.
Yeah, I struggled with that mad though. Like, I remember cutting hair on stage and being like, because you were so nervous about doing what you were doing and showing it to people who are peers, really. I'd be like, how am I flipping here? Like, what am I doing here? You know what I mean? Yeah. So you'd be cutting hair and then you might forget to tell the crowd what you're doing, or you might forget to turn the chair. And it was so much to consider to show somebody, as opposed to being effectively in charge in here and doing it in here. I remember Kenny Duncan, I was working with him on stage and he went, "You're cutting on the dark side of the moon." And I was like, "What?" Like a young kid just on stage with he's a legend, isn't he? So he's like, "Come here. How can they see this if you're not turning the chair around? It's the dark side of the moon." And I was like, "Oh yeah." So then for the rest of the day, I was like, "Ken, why this? How comes that?" To the point where he must have been like, "Jim, go away." But I learned so much by just chasing you as well. Like, everyone just, why'd you do that? How comes this? What's that for? And I think it made me better at presentation because of being so shrill. Like, almost, I was kind of like the next wave through the door because of you had gone and done it, then they expected it of me. And they're like, "Right, you're doing this now." And I'm like, "What?" But, I mean, do you know what I mean?
You know, we got you on the couch up at Barber Connect, wandering around there. Obviously, you were doing your thing, but did you watch others? Did you see?
I always try to.
Do you see very different skills? I mean, you know, I've certainly asked, you know, from here, you know, what skills do I need? How do I get on? You know, if I was a young barber trying to get on now, what advice would you give me as to how to get onto a show team, how to get on stage, and what to do? What are the skills I need to practice?
Do your thing in it, I think, first.
Yeah, do you know what it is? It's master your craft first. But it's also, we get asked this a lot when you're at a show. People go, "How do I become part of an education team?" Truth be told, it's a lot of it's luck, being in the right place at the right time, making that work for you, taking the opportunity and running with it when it occurs. But there's only a handful of like paid positions within the industry. There's only a handful of companies that will pay you for your time to be on a stage. Ambassadorships are slightly different, in the fact that they'll give you product for your appearance or for being attached to their brand. But if you're starting out, you have to take your chances where you can get them. You're not going to be paid for it.
Yeah.
I don't know anyone that, like, you know, new kids on the block that are coming through. You have to cut your teeth first on working for a smaller product company and just ask them, "Can I work on your stand? Can I do a cut on your stand?" You know, don't be shy in coming forward. If you think that you're at that stage, and a lot of the time you don't have to hand out education with what you're doing, you can just showcase. You know, that eases you into it because people will be up close and personal. They might ask you something. Once out, they're just going to watch you.
Yeah.
You can cut in silence if you want on the side stands, because that's the opportunity that you get. And then you can grow from there. You know, it might be a case of you've done a few shows. People have got to see you. You know, you've supported yourself with your social media and stuff like that. But you have to push companies. Like I said before, when we did New World Barbers and pushed that through Modern Barber and stuff like that.
You're almost forcing.
It created the opportunity.
You're as a product, saying, "We're this." Because I think this is an opinion I've had for a long time with the industry. Like, we are effectively the wheels. The car don't go nowhere without the wheels. So these big companies sometimes don't have any connection to cutting hair other than the fact that they sell products that do what we do. They waxes, clippers, whatever. If you don't feed that through the veins of the body doesn't move. We're the body, right? Like, without us, what are you doing? And have you ever cut hair? No, we're just a corporate company that does. So we're kind of the voice of that, you know? So my perspective of how do you get onto an education team, when they say that to me when I'm standing behind a booth, why do you want to? Like, what do you think it will give you? What do you think you can give people? Because if you just want to do it because it's the done thing, probably leave it. If you think you can educate someone and give them a perspective they didn't have, cool. I genuinely believe being yourself, being connected to people, asking questions, being in spots at the right times puts you where the universe wants you to go, you know?
And well, hey, that gives me my own next question. Why did you do it? Has it been good for you? What's it given your companies? What's it given your careers?
It's given me personally a fantastic time. You know, I've traveled the world. 2019, I think I did 9 different countries, some of them 3 times. You know, and it was like I was everywhere. I was absolutely knackered, but I had a great time.
I couldn't get a haircut for ages.
Yeah. it was great seeing the world and being paid to do that and, you know, delivering education from it might be a class of 4 people to, I think I did one with like, I think it had 4,000 in the crowd in Russia. But, you know, business-wise, does that transfer down?
Mm.
Probably not. Maybe a small percentage where people go, oh, yeah, you know, I saw you on Instagram or this, that, and the other.
There was guys in the beginning didn't understand it.
Yeah.
Remember, like, well, yeah, you think you're something now.
Yeah.
Sort of, almost, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I remember one guy specifically saying, oh, I was in their shop. We're shooting something for Modern Barber. So we were using cameras ourselves to shoot. He had the chair turned. He's behind it, like, loads, like, just making a shoot, really. And this guy's like, yeah, I went there. These, I think, they're photographers now. They didn't, the customers were slow to catch up on the transition of what we were trying to achieve.
Yeah.
Now, the same people are going, yeah, my barber's in magazines, mate. But at first, they didn't want to walk that path with us.
Yeah, it was a hard transition in your shop from, like, you know, cutting someone's hair to then, I need to photograph this, you know.
Yeah, do of course.
Quick, you know, and people would be like, other people in the queue would be like,
yeah, yeah.
How long's he taking? Oh, I'm not coming back here. You know, and you did. You had a few people leave because of it. But it sort of built us as a brand, and it cemented my place in education and stuff like that, you know. And I'm not saying that – this is the other weird thing. You know, there could be a million other better barbers out there than me, you know. And I've always reflected on this, and I'm like, you know, but can they do what I do when they step up onto a stage? Not necessarily. You know, it's two different things, yeah, you know. You'll get some fantastic barbers out there, but if you put a microphone on them and say, right, okay, break this down for an audience and entertain them and keep their attention for half an hour, 45 minutes, can they do that? Not everyone can do it. Not everyone's comfortable with it.
Yeah.
You know, and the more you do it, the easier it gets. So when you're working consistently, traveling around from show to show to show to show, it becomes second nature to you. But you also have to avoid getting stuck in a rut of what you're talking about.
You mean like delivering the same things?
Yeah, because if you deliver the same thing constantly...
he's gonna you go to the show, you're like, he's going to do this again.
He'll say this in a minute. Yeah,
but do you think that's the thing? Do you think as a performer...
Yeah.
You know, yes, you need the skills to be able to do it, but do you need the personality?
Yeah.
Do you need to have 100%. Some personality to carry it off?
Yeah, fully.
I take that from a consumer perspective, not from a me or even a you perspective to a degree. It's like, if there's people I enjoy watching even now, and like, if I get a time, a break or whatever to wander off and go and watch someone, like I was watching you two talking before, and then I'll go and see, I'll go and find, luckily enough to have Hayden with us a lot of the times, so I can watch, I adore watching her. There's certain people that I'm like really inspired to look at, to hear from, to understand because of the presence that they have. And I'd go and stand behind them in their shop for free to learn their perspective on stuff. And I'm lucky enough in my career to be able to call a lot of those people my friends. So if I want to know something about what they're doing and why, I can ring them and say, hey, I saw this video, or he was on stage doing this. Can you tell me, can you send me a breakdown in video or whatever? I'm lucky to have that because they're my peers to a degree. But yeah, I really appreciate the human beingism of a person that allows them to do what they're doing, as opposed to he works for this person or these people, this company. That's really besides the point to me. I'm gravitated towards human beings as opposed to...
Yeah, I mean, I think it definitely is that point of engaging with an audience, and that's no mean feat at all.
You have to keep them, that's the thing. I mean, you know, you can go around, you can see some educators, you know, wherever, and... they're not holding anyone's attention, you know, and it is really hard because they're good at what they do, but if they're not delivering it right, then you're looking, you're standing there like, oh my God, really?
Yeah.
Really? You know, you need a bit of someone's personality in there.
Do you think, I mean, but do you think with the shows, certainly now, let's go currently, are people there to watch the haircuts or are they watching the performance?
It's a blur now.
Are they watching the product? Are they just watching the show? Do they feel they just, being in the audience feels like they're part of it?
It's a blur.
I'm not so sure it's that important what you're doing with the scissors and the clippers on stage anymore.
I think...
especially seeing kind of with some of the stage, I mean, you know, you were quite a long way away from it.
Yeah.
You know, you weren't getting up, and even the screens that were up, it wasn't like deep into the action. So it certainly felt, I mean, it felt great. I loved wandering around and it really felt inspired as an industry and what we're doing.
Yeah.
I don't know if I watched a haircut, but I don't know if that's because, you know,
I think sometimes it's, but I think also sometimes it's time. So depending on your schedule at a show, like if you're working at a show, sometimes your schedule can be like absolutely flat out. And then other times your schedule's totally different where, you know, you might be on for an hour, you might have an hour off and then you go off somewhere else for an hour. In which case I'll always wander around and there'll be people that I want to watch.
Bump into a few folks.
Yeah.
Do you not think though that now, having done that side of the industry for as long as we have done, I feel like the stardust has gone to a degree where you can't just be a consumer at a show. You can't just walk in and be a client customer no more. You're looking at it from a different angle. Like, you know what I mean? Like if you went to a theme park and was like, oh wow, the rides and the lights and the glitz and the glamour of it. It's very hard to be like, whoa, now, because you've got to move this and carry that and meet these people. And not that I don't like it, but I missed the first couple of years of doing that and just being like, wow, this is really...
I used to find it really weird when I first started doing shows that, you know, people came up to you and wanted photographs with you.
Yeah, well...
and stuff like that. And someone said to me, I think we came away from one of the shows and we were about to drive back. We're walking across the car park and you have that...
done. Yeah.
We're back to normal.
Yeah.
It's like someone went, well, what do you mean? I said... in there, it's like you're David Beckham.
Walk in the car park,
no one gives a fuck who
you know what's crazy, though?
One cares.
Some people travel it.
I'm back to being just me.
Yeah, but that's... you understand it, right? Like, I remember there's certain people who... I remember being in the lobby of a hotel checking in to do a show for the weekend, and this woman's like, can I have a picture with you? And I'm like, who are you going to show it to? Who's going to care? Who's going to care? Or I used to get this a lot when I'd go somewhere, be on my own doing a thing. They'll go, where's Boldy? And I'm like, I don't know. He's grown up. Like, he does what he wants. he's not always with me. But I had a real trouble at the beginning of when we were all together where people would be like, can I have a picture? And I'm like, why?
I don't know why. I've just got the Chuckle Brothers. You're not right without each other. No disrespect intended.
But it is weird when all these things start to happen to you because you're related to what people perceive when you're on a show, you know, and you're on a stage. And, you know, they go, I remember signing the first autograph, right? And I was like, what? He goes, can you sign this magazine? I was in the magazine. And he's like, can you sign that? And I was like, okay. And I felt really awkward about it. I was like, yeah, someone get a photo. This is my first autograph.
I'm mad. And now you just do it, right?
It's just weird.
There was a guy who, he goes, can we have a picture? It was me and Kieran, and he said, can we have a picture of you guys? And I was like, yeah, listen, we're just getting lunch, man. 2 minutes, we'll be back, we'll have a picture of you. And he was like, oh, no, but I want to take a picture of you. I was like, listen, we've just come off. We're going to have a bit of food. We'll catch up with you. So then we were sat down eating jacket potatoes, and Matey Boy took a photo without us knowing. And he gave it to Rachel and she put it in the magazine. And I don't know what magazine it was, but if you went back, I'm there, mouth full of potato. And I was like, what a bastard.
So apart from not getting caught half eating a jacket potato, any other tips for people who were wanting to start out? Because we've put a lot out there that, yes, you need the skill. But let's go on and send the assumption that people have got the skill. They're the fully formed, they are the barber they want to be.
Yep.
And they want to share. You know, we're seeing, without opening that one up too wide, we're seeing a lot of people, you know, who quite early on in their career are teaching online and showing stuff online. So they're doing that bit. That transition from, you know, who are getting a following and people liking to going in their studio doing a haircut and talking to the camera to going live on stage. Any tips? Is it an easy transition? How do you remember you said you stood out in front of 4,000 Russians?
Mm.
Was that natural? Do you remember your first time on stage? So there are guys there that are doing studio work, having success of doing it,
yep.
who now want to transfer that to stage, maybe from their following they can do. Any tips for how they can make it
I think now
more
on,
successful?
On stage, it's probably a bit easier now because everyone's slightly more organic. When we first started, it was like you said earlier, oh, this clipper does this, this, and this. Mm. The running time is this. The battery life is this. It has X amount of teeth on the blade. We had to do all that.
So they used to send us a freaking book of it.
To have to constantly have that knowledge. Now it's more organic. It's all about your style that you're creating, how you go about that. You might touch on what clippers you're using, but it has become about the haircut more and the education of how you get to that. So for someone young coming up, the transition is probably easier now. Than what it was, because you don't have to memorize this, 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 and this.
Sure.
That and the level of attachment to because of the TikToks and Instagram lives and all that now, yeah. you can just be like, I'm this. And people will believe you until you give them a reason to not.
Yeah. Mm. So it's probably easier in that sense. But the only way you're going to do it is to hound people.
Just get up there and keep annoying.
Network. Yeah, it's network. Yeah, network.
My perception of it.
And that will get you on there. Once you're on there, it's a case of get your personality across. Because no one wants to see a wet lettuce.
Like running, got the baton, isn't it?
Yeah. Just run, yeah. And go from there. And then it's in your hands how much or how little you want to do. If you can reach out and you get that first chance to get up on that stage, then stay in contact with those people that have put you on that stage, and then they'll get you back on that stage.
Mm.
If you let go of that, then
it's so much easier to get in touch, to find people, to be in touch.
Everyone's accessible. The amount of messages that you get, on your Instagram on a daily, you must get it, where people go, oh, I'd love to do that, and then you chat to them and put them in the right direction or whatever you're doing, and I still get that now. I still get people like going, oh, how do you do this or how do you do that? And
it's surprising at how many people are approachable. Like from my side of being able to do any education or ambassadorship or anything like that, I was lucky to have the lead educator for Anders in the chair next to me. So I'm like, oi, this, that, whatever. Or just pay attention. But then it's strange. I'm a massive basketball fan and I used to always look at how do people become greats at something. Like I'll read an autobiography of an athlete that I'm not bothered about their sport because I want to know how to hit the pinnacle of it.
Mm.
Just to understand the mental perspective. And Kobe Bryant used to always ring up like Michael Jordan and people like that and be like, how'd you do this?
Mm.
Why'd you do that? What drives you to do this? So I'm him and I. Like, I would literally be like, oi, this, that, whatever. Why'd you do this? How come? What for? Well, if we drive somewhere, like most of the time he'll drive because I don't like spending money on petrol. But for the whole time, I'm asking questions, right?
Hey, you got to save money for jumpers, surely.
He drives like Miss Daisy. Seriously.
But yeah, forever asking questions, man. I don't think you can ever be the complete of anything. Like, I'm a dad, I'm a son, I'm a brother, I'm loads of things. I'm never the complete product. I always want to know more about how to do.
Yeah, no, someone said to me a long time, it's only stupid people that don't ask questions.
Yeah, it's never a wrong question.
Mm.
That's the other side of it. I think people get embarrassed to ask something that they're not sure about. They go, how do I ask this?
Yeah, grab just someone ask and it. Say it, man.
There was a guy,
you remember this or not, right? There was a dude come over to me and Baldy at a hair show and he was like, you two are wicked, man. I've been following you for ages. You're brilliant at cutting hair, whatever. And we were like, yeah, thanks, man. Appreciate it. Then he was so nervous. He spilled coffee down his T-shirt. Remember who I'm talking about, right? He goes, how'd you do this? How'd you do that? How'd you do this? And we spoke to him for what, an hour?
Yeah.
Talking about development and working with brands and whatever else. He's probably the most prolific barber on the scene right now. And he literally said, well, cheers, lads. I'm going to go and do that. And he just went and done it. And still to this day, I still message him. How are you doing? How's things going? And when I see him, he won an award recently.
Oh, recently,
and
yeah.
I'll see him the day after and I hugged him. And I was like, mate, flipping hell, you set out to do something and you surpassed all of the things that you said you were going to. And that's, a conversation where I've still got the message of him saying, oh, flipping home, man, I was so nervous, I spilled coffee on myself. Do you remember me?
Yeah, I
did. And now, you'd have to, people are queuing up to get a haircut off him. Like, he's one of the best barbers out here right now.
Yeah, he is.
And mad humble as well.
And I love that he's still coffee boy to you.
Yeah.
No, he's definitely not. He's definitely not. I told him last time I spoke to him, I was like, send me a video, have you done that? because he was impeccable. Yeah, yeah. I was like, send me your fading, your regime. Like, how you do it? Ping it over to me. He's like, yeah, I will. I'm still waiting. But he's mad famous now, isn't it?
Yeah. And does this migrate over to ambassadors? So we're seeing more and more ambassadors popping up, more and more people who are linked product and to companies. You know, both of you are ambassadors to companies and work long-term with them. How, you know, hey, for anyone on the outside, how does it work? What is expected of you, and does it work for you?
It works for me because it's going to sound really weird. So it was nice to get to a position in my shop where I didn't have to pay for anything.
I knew he was going to say that. I literally, it works for me because I don't pay for a clipper for 10 years.
That's true. Right. So, like, obviously, I wanted to get to a point. This was a natural progression, right? So you get an ambassadorship. Firstly, the ambassadorship generally is for product or social media, right? So you promote them, they'll look after you. And so anyone that's looking for an ambassadorship, that's how it works. It's all about product, right? You're not being paid money. You will get product for your services to them, if you like. So if you post for them and stuff like that, you get product. So for me, I signed a contract with Andis years ago. So I'm attached to them. They were my main brand, right? Still are. So I then got to a point where Jim hooked me up with iCandy, right? Because we used to put things each way. We go, oh, do you want to get involved in this a little bit? You know, or do you want to, what about these? Have you had a look at this? And I'm like, all right, okay. Oh, I'll give them a shout on for you. So anyway, iCandy. So we have iCandy Australia do our scissors. Great brand. We love them. And been with them, I don't know how many years now. It's like been a good few years. Since they started off as a brand, pretty much.
Oh, right, okay.
So they're still developing and they're still growing. But it's a family-run business still. Out in Australia, they're quite big.
It's the same thing. It's good people doing good things.
They're good people. Good product. I got to the point where I didn't have to pay for scissors. I then ended up with working for American Crew and Revlon, and you got product and stuff like that. You then Maverick, same thing. Went from American Crew to Maverick. They supply you product or stuff that you do for them. I then I didn't have a hairdryer. I was like, I've got a company that does hair dryers. So reached out, got ETI. They supply my hair dryers. And I was like, this is fantastic.
Were you using a hair dryer prior to that?
No. I think we had a conversation and they were like, what hair dryer do you use? And I was like, I think I use Parlux or something like that because it's old school. And then they were like, well, what about if we bring you in some hair dryers? So they brought me in some hair dryers. They then supplied my other shop with hair dryers. And then my stage hair dryers, they give me an international one that works on their voltage. They give me one for the UK.
Yeah,
and I'm like, this is great. So I'm got to that point where it's like, right, I don't buy anything. It's lovely. Yeah. And I still have to do all that stuff in return. Mm. But if you're new and you're coming into it and you want an ambassadorship, you have to understand that you have to build that relationship. And that relationship is going to be on the basis that you're going to get product for views or media or whatever you're going to do. But you set that.
And now is it the other way around? Is it more that, you know, if you've got a good following that you start using a product company, you start using their thing, show it off a bit.
They come to
you. And then approach them? Or are they going to come and track you down because of your following?
I don't think it wasn't like really organic. Set up all times. Yeah. I think now it's a chaseable option. I think them. We just realistically were having a really good time cutting hair, having a laugh with our pals, and it's sort of. Do you know what I mean? It sort of happened,
and then it has a knock on from there.
Yeah,
you know, they'll reach out to one of you or whatever, and then that organically happens. You know, you end up with companies like you say approaching you as opposed to you approaching a company. Mm. But I've noticed. Recently, it's gone the opposite way, hasn't it? Where people used to sign to product comms, like clipper firms and stuff like that, right? Even as an ambassador. And now they're going Chris and Sons.
Yeah, because your distribution.
Chris and Sons will give you an ambassadorship because they use the whole range, right? So they'll go, well, I'll send you some Wall, I'll send you some Bablis, I'll send you some Gamma, I'll send you You do your video stuff for us.
You're effectively not attached to the brand. But then so for them, business-wise, it goes back. You've got a transitional video of five different products that you can jump back on the actual conglomerate with and say, yeah, we've covered all the bases, mate.
Yeah.
This guy's getting free clippers and a set of gloves.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
and some companies will ask for, like, I don't know, a post a week or, you know, four posts a month. Others will go, I want five a day. You know, depends on what you want to do and what your expectation is on what you want to do with it. But, you know, generally I find...
And do you think it gives you as a company more credibility or as an individual more credibility if you are linked to a company, if you have that kind of...
I think people think it does. I think that's really the case. But then I don't feel like looking at the entities of human beings, regardless. Like, I personally look at a barber that I'm a fan of and a friend of too, and I don't go, oh, he's the creative director of this or he's an ambassador of that. I'm like, he can cut hair. Really can cut hair, and he's a really good human or whatever.
Yeah.
So I think from the outside perspective looking in, they go, yeah, it gives... if I'm with these, like, it makes me good. You make you good. You know what I mean?
I mean, I guess as it boils down, you're ending up with the fact is, you know, everyone I've spoken to over the last year and a half or so of this experience has been, they've really learnt their skill, that they have that, you know, you've got that, you've learned what you do. And even, you know, whether you've been doing it 30 plus years or even recently we've met people who've only been doing it 2 or 3 years. Mm. Yeah, they really have that passion and enthusiasm for the craft and the interest in it.
I think there's an omittance.
So that's
got to
be the start of it, isn't it?
Like, yeah, I think now though, there's like when you go to a hair show, and correct me if I'm wrong, when I said it was a blur, it's like emergence of things. Like there was a very set out, when we started going to shows, there was like, these are your people that are doing education. These are your people who are distribution. These are your people who are here to learn, that have bought tickets to pay attention. The blur comes for me now, rightly or wrongly, the consumer are coming through the door with a GoPro and they're almost gorilla teaching because they'll set up a... Like they're not actually cutting air for people. They'll cut over here at 12 o'clock, there at 1 o'clock. And it's like, are you here to be educated or educate? I don't know.
Mm.
What the market is now. That to me is really confusing. Like everybody, because of the social media age, which is how we built our career online, I suppose, but it's more so now. They're going, yeah, guys, follow me on a day of... What side of the camp are you? Mm. I find that really difficult. Like,
but it's a huge... You know what I mean? I must admit, I mean, Modern Barber last year, I know there was changes within it, the ownership and all that kind of stuff. But the buzz in that building, in that room, was quite amazing. And even, you know, I was saying the other week about about Salon International.
Mm.
You know, Salon International is a barber thing now as well, don't you think?
Yeah.
There's so much more barber stuff going on there.
Oh, from back in the day, yeah.
And the buzz from it. Yeah, you know, that's the weird thing now. You wander around there. I think I probably found this last year at Modern Barber and at Salon the most enjoyable. I really thoroughly enjoyed it. I mean, obviously we were filming, so we had other jobs there to do. But I just really enjoyed just wandering around and just seeing what was going on. There's a real energy floating around the shows again now, which probably 2 or 3 years ago
dipped
a lot. Yeah. It felt very flat. It was definitely re-energized.
When we came back from COVID, I think there was this big thing about everything's gone digital. You know, education is now digital. Shows aren't going to be what they were. So I think there was that little bit of like, all right, it's going to be a little bit quieter. You know, half the shows were half the size originally, you know, when they first came back.
Like you really felt the golf in it.
Yeah. But I think people want to go back to them now. You know, they do want to be there. They do want to go and see people. They even if it's a social side of it.
Yeah, a community, right? Like it's not even about, I cut hair in a normal everyday, mum and dad, and he's a flipping celebrity. It's not that. It's like you go and see people that you're like, oh, mate, flipping hell, I know you from we message or whatever. Like, it's community, isn't it?
No, it really was. It definitely felt like there was that buzz going on. And certainly, you know, I love the little pop-up pods that were there. I love, there were, two chairs that there were some quite unknown people who'd never cut before jumping up. I think Simon was kind of running around chatting to them. And there were some really lovely kind of beginnings of presenters coming on to that. I mean, all the times I've done them, I would really recommend anyone giving it a try. I think whether you make a career out of it or just know that you've chalked it up, that you've done it, if it appeals, is important.
Well, I think if you haven't been, it's quite exciting going to your first one, especially, you know, I remember when I was young and I went to my first one, Salinant National at Earls Court.
Ride your horse all the way there?
Yeah. I was like super excited because it's a big thing, isn't it? It's a big industry thing that you're only in the shop the rest of the time, then all of a sudden there's this big show. Oh, I'm going to go and see people,
you know,
and see what's there.
I think that's it. And like you say, we all feel like we're connected more to each other, you know, through social media, through direct mail. Yeah. You know, we all feel like we're there. To actually be there and be able to ask, I don't know, Baldy for his autograph, say, would be very exciting. Boys, thank you very much for your time. I've really enjoyed it. I hope that's given some great information over. I've really gained from it. Thank you very much, mate.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Great to see you. That's been The Noble Barber. I hope you enjoyed it. We'll be back soon, I hope. Take care. Bye.
Welcome to The Noble Barber Podcast. We're always looking for interesting people and interesting stories. If you know someone or you are someone with a great story that you want to share, get in touch and come join me on the sofa. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the episode and we'll see you next time.